that my eyes are old, and they're hard to read for any length of time. Whereas you get the paperback, and I can read that all day, the paperback size thing.
Yeah, I can't get old, the print's just getting smaller.
That's the problem. The print is getting smaller. Doggone it, they should stop that. But with this thing, now it's got a jack in the bottom for headphones, but it doesn't do any music stuff yet. That may be the next generation coming along.
The Life Drive does music.
Yeah, yeah. But we're getting to that point. We're getting to the point where everything you want to do is going to be right there.
Convergence.
You know, they're already... you can buy... who is it? Sony? Mm-hmm. Somebody just announced... No, somebody just announced a cell phone that takes the little SD cards.
Okay.
So you can put, you know, 512 megabytes of music.
The SD cards for you folks are the ones that go in the camera.
The little tiny, you know, blue ones, and they'll fit in the top of the cell phone. And now, you know, the same headset that it annoys you. You think somebody's talking to you, and they turn their head a little bit, and you see the thing, and they're talking to somebody else entirely. Those little guys right there.
Half a gig
of RAM right there, and
equivalent to 500 floppies.
Right.
In this little itty bitty postage stamp thing.
Right. You can get 100 or so songs on the thing.
Is that a sample?
Yeah. I can get 4,000 pictures on that card.
Yep.
Yeah, and those don't get jammed up in a floppy drive or the shutter's coming off.
Right, but you'll be able to stick that in your phone and play your music, so you can ride around with your music all day long. The other thing is, the only technology they haven't figured out yet is the screen. But other than that, you could get, and the power requirements, I guess, but you could get a whole computer in this size. There's people are making tiny little computers all the time. There's a new computer, a Linux computer, that's the size, it's just about that long and about that big. It looks like you stick it on the end of a network jack, and now you're connected to the network. It's just this little thing sticking out of the end of the plug. So they can put a whole computer in those things. So what they've got, the only two technologies, three if you count the battery, but the only two technologies you're really missing are the screen and the keyboard. And they've solved the keyboard. There's a company that's producing a little cube about this big. You set it down in front of you, and it projects a keyboard using a laser beam, projects a keyboard on the table. And it actually works. Now, I've typed on it, and it works fine. It's just, it's tiring. You know, you're used to a little bit of tactical feedback and a little bounce. So it's like you're typing on the desk, and, you know, for 10 minutes, that's not a big deal. But try that for 3 or 4 hours. You're not going to want to do it. But the fact is, you could build that in the bottom of one of these, and now I could sit there, and if I didn't have a computer here, I could just sit there and say, yeah, okay, there I am. And all I need now is some sort of screen. That's the next thing they're going to have to solve. But I could put that thing down and be working away.
That's almost working into the what's almost sort of known as the stealth computer. A one-inch monitor sits on your glasses, or as glasses that you wear. And a one-inch monitor, 1 inch from your face, looks like a 20-inch monitor at normal distance. So you have your own computing environment, and it's private. No one else can peer over your shoulder and see your screen. And they call them also wearable computers. So you have a computer on your hip, a gyroscopic mouse, so just moving your hand will control the cursor, and a little tiny screen on your glasses, and you can be walking around.
I wouldn't suggest
driving. And
really
annoy people. Yeah.
Yeah, those gloves, people might think you're, you know, yep, picking them off. Or
but now the new problem is Nintendo-itis. We've gone through carpal tunnel syndrome with keyboard typing. Now, a lot of the young people today will get pagers and cell phones with that instant message. And they type with their thumbs, and it's become known as Nintendo typing from the Nintendo video games. So you're wearing out your thumbs. Instead of your carpal tunnel in your wrist, all you're moving is your thumb, so you wear out your thumb and end up with Nintendo-itis, trying to type on your thumb.
How good are those screens you're talking about that hook to your glasses in terms of resolution, colors?
Well, they're very, very high resolution because they're so small. The problem that makes LCD screens so expensive is trying to get a really, really big one. And now we're seeing several companies. Apple has a 23-inch for $3,000. Sony has a 24-inch for, 30-inch for $3,000. Sony's got a 34-inch for about $5,000. because they're so big and so many pixels and so many transistors, it makes them very expensive. A one-inch screen is dirt cheap because there's only a few thousand pixels on it. You look at your laptop screen and you've got millions of pixels, and each pixel has a transistor behind it. And there's sort of a thing in the LCD industry that if you get a stuck pixel, if it's either stuck on or stuck off, it's not broken yet. You need several stuck pixels before the manufacturer considers it broken. Because, you know, say there's 5 million pixels on the screen, you have two or three stuck, such a tiny percentage of the total number of pixels, it doesn't count as broken.
You know, very annoying
when it's in the dead center of the screen, though.
Do you remember the movie Johnny Mnemonic?
Johnny Mnemonic with Keanu Reeves, acting
where
at his best.
He literally has his headset on, you know, like goggles, and he's sitting there doing it. Well, the aeronautics lab is experimenting with that right now. There's a whole separate company, and they've literally got a whole computer hooked right into this, and they can sit there and move cubes around and do design with these gloves. They're already doing it right now, and they're hoping by the year, I believe it, this was last year, so by 2006, they actually will have software out there that they can use to design the next aero, you know, project, whatever, whether the space, working on additional stuff for the space lab or the next generation of ships that are literally going to carry people back and forth. They can design with these gloves, and they just see literally a whole room would be nothing but a screen, and they can move parts around. You know, you look at the guy, you think he's nuts. You know.
There's a company in town that makes 3D monitors and 3D headsets. It's like an oversized headset around you. Twin LCDs in them, so you get the full depth perception and three-dimensional display. And they're starting to come out in the game market first, because gamers like to spend a lot of money on cool stuff. But they're slowly becoming affordable. What are they now, like $3,000, $4,000 they're down to?
Which is actually affordable to many gamers.
Now, you spend $1,000 on your video card alone in your computer to push that many more trillions of textured pixels. Texels.
Yeah, and you find a lot of kids. I teach at RIT, and a lot of my students work like dogs at various jobs, and I used to think, how great are they? You know, that's terrific. Then I realized that was so they could spend all of it buying cool computer toys for their gaming habit. And, of course, the gaming stuff is getting real big these days, not just in terms of players, but in terms of the people writing the games. The U.S. Army has a game out now.
Close combat, first to fight.
And America's Army.
Just that close combat is the Marines.
Right. And the Marines have one, and I think the Air Force has. Of course, the Air Force has there's 100 flight simulators. But the point is that they're actually, they play online, and they play, and a lot of people who are online playing are actual military personnel, and they're actually evaluating people. They've admitted it.
The last Starfighter, yeah.
Well, there was a commercial, too, where these kids are literally playing this military game, and they're going, darn, they're good.
And his team comes in and wipes them out in 5 seconds.
And it's a group of SEALs
over
in this other room, somewhere it's off base, and you're going, yeah, we kicked them again. They're high-fiving each other.
Yeah. But it happens, and it's true. And what they're doing is literally evaluating the next generation of folks. They're talking to them about, while they're playing, they're recruiting.
It's combat tactics.
They're teaching them combat tactics and things like that.
$5,000 for a high-end gaming computer to start training soldiers in combat tactics, and then you move up to the million-dollar simulators and real-time open-air arrangements. So you start out with something inexpensive on a regular desktop computer.
Do you want to go start seeing about questions? You can more or less take them.
Why not? Whatever.
Because we can go on talking technology.
Who has questions? Just one.
Rob, the producer. Go ahead and produce, Rob.
Yeah,
I'm producing.
How you doing? Really
appreciate your show, you guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
I know Nick had touched on this subject yesterday briefly,
and I have one other little question. You're the first person that I've heard mention anything about how long the DVDs may burn last X number of years. You said something along the lines of five.
Yeah, that's kind of, I think, kind of optimistic.
They're rated for 100 years in ideal conditions. In a hermetically sealed, temperature-proof, you know, humidity-proof box.
Mason jar on Mason jar on front porch.
Yeah, with no light. And there's also a lot of difference in the brands of media. You know, free after rebate, they'll probably quit working in a year or two.
Or while you're burning.
Or while you're burning. I've seen them like that. You pull it off the spindle and the coating is flaking off.
Yep.
For permanent archiving, stuff you want to keep, stick with a better name brand. TDK, Sony. I love the Verbatim Datamax until Kodak stopped making them. Right. The gold, they had the gold protection, the extra coating on it. You know, you're going to pay a buck a disc, but it will last.
The old adage of, you know, what you pay is what you'll get. You buy, you know, a spindle of them, you know, and they're super cheap. Like, you can get a spindle of, say, 100 CDs for $19.95.
With a $20 rebate.
Yeah, with a $20. No, I had one better. I had a bunch of HPs. Buy one, $19.95, get the second one for free. So I got 200 for $19.95. Yep. Do I expect them to last long? No. I just do quick burns to get back people's data off. Here you go. And we've back up.
We've seen a progression in storage technologies over the years. Floppy to zip drive. The SciQuest drives were in there for a while, then zip drives and CD. We're already moving away from CD, going to DVD. CDs only hold 700 megs. DVDs hold 4,700 megs. And now we're transitioning to double-layer DVDs that hold 8,000 megs. So more and more standards, more and more acronyms, more and more stuff. So every 3 or 4 years, the technology changes, and so you need to sell all the old stuff and buy all the new stuff.
I'm just saying that if I burn a DVD with pictures today, again, depending on the quality of the
disc, yeah.
It's only going to last 5 years.
I personally wouldn't put money down that it's going to last a lot longer. If you leave it laying flat and it's in a decent environment without a lot of temperature changes and humidity changes, it'll last longer. That's why they're talking about 100 years under ideal conditions, and they literally mean sealed in a vault.
Well, if I want pictures semi-permanently,
every few years you reburn them.
Yeah. Onto the next new media.
And you spend the money. Yeah. I mean, the reality is, you know, like Dave said, if somebody says, oh, I need a copy of this, I want to take it home, I'll give them the cheapest disc I can find. If it gets home and then they get it, it's great. It's great. If I'm doing backups, I'll use better discs, but not great discs, because backups become useless after about 2 weeks. I'm going to back everything up again anyway. But when I'm backing up, you know, pictures of my daughter, I buy the expensive discs. They're worth it to me. You know, I'll get 5, 6, 7 years out of them. What I prefer personally to do is back things up to a hard drive. And then every few years, I buy a new hard drive. Just suck everything over and...
It's hard drives. Now you can put those in... I mean, you can get hard drives so cheap now. I mean, you can get like a, you know, 60-gig hard drive for around $50. You can put it in one of those enclosures for another $35.
And that's a key. A lot of people will put a second drive in their computer as a backup. Well, that doesn't really buy you much. Whatever happens to your main drive to make it fail will probably happen to the other drive that's in there, too. You want a removable media. So an external hard drive you back up everything onto, unplug that hard drive from the computer, put it in a fire safe. And then that's another key. It's got to be a data-ready fire safe. Most fire safes are only rated for paper, which is 451 degrees Fahrenheit. Hard drives and plastic platters and disks will melt a lot sooner than that. So a data-ready fire safe and an off-premises. And a lot depends on how religious you want to be about your backup strategy.
But yep. There is another option, Nick. I'm sorry. I work for Kodak and paper. You can still go to a Wegmans or a Walmart, take your little disc that you had.
Yep.
For 19, 25 cents a print, you can get silver halide technology prints.
And they start fading in a couple of years.
They're going to be around for 50 years.
Well, you can get traditional silver halide prints from your digital photos, and they'll last a lot longer, again, under ideal conditions. You leave it laying in the sun, it's going to fade in a couple of years. We've seen inkjet printers fade in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. We've seen inkjet printers wrong when you take them outside and it's raining.
Yeah. So yeah, you do a traditional silver halide or dye sublimation print, seal it behind glass and put it in a fixed temperature and fixed light. And then, 50, 100 years, you'll probably have those pictures again.
But you're right. I mean, how many of us have a box of slides our grandparents took? Nobody took care of those. We don't even know who those people are anymore.
They're all yellowed now.
But you can put them on slides. They're pretty good. They lasted because the medium that they were on was really designed to last. The media today are not designed to last in quite the same way.
Disposable success.
So you have to be diligent in transferring. And one point that Steve made needs to be reiterated, which is that as the technology changes, you need to change the medium you save under.
Was that your story about the 9-track tape at RIT?
It was a chase.
A chase.
We had a paper tape, a paper punch, punch cards. They had a program that had been running just fine for 100 years or however long it was running, and they finally needed to make a change because we were merging. Lincoln was merging with Chase, and they suddenly realized they had no source code for this program. It was a very important program. Somebody found the original set of punch tapes stuck in a drawer somewhere, right? Big one of those big pull-out drawers. The punch cards, all the punch cards were there. I remember punch cards. We used to use them for bookmarks.
I remember.
No reader.
Punching them.
No reader. Yeah. I remembered for my boss's 25th anniversary, we grabbed an old punch card reader out of a closet and, spray painted it and decorated it with bows and things and gave it to him as a joke. We ran upstairs, broke into his office, pulled this thing off his shelf. As we're heading down the stairs, they're ripping bows and things off and praying that, I hadn't screwed it up so badly that it wouldn't work. We threw the tapes, we threw it on the machine, it still worked, we put the cards in, and it read every one of them.
Yeah, there's
But it was just one of those deals where, as the technology had upgraded, they'd upgraded all their programs quite diligently, except this one, which fell through the cracks.
There's an issue now at the National Archives. A lot of the National Archives are on 9-track tape. 50 years ago, that's what everybody used.
Yep.
The tapes are wearing out. It's rust glued onto plastic, right? Is magnetic media. And then, so the tapes are wearing out. The tapes will stick together if you don't store them right. So they're re-encoding everything in the National Archives from 9-track tape into something new. And they had to find 9-track tape readers that still worked. Now, what good is a CD-ROM disk that lasts 100 years if you don't have CD-ROM drives in 100 years?
One of the other things that I could suggest, as a matter of fact, it's a company right here in Rochester, and we're going to be having them come on the show in a couple of weeks. It's a company called Blue Tie. And what Blue Tie does, a gentleman was mentioned in Forbes magazine, and they offer for $8 a month 1 gig of storage, so you can literally store 1 gig of information. You can also get
off-site, away from your
facility. And they back it
facility.
Up, and they guarantee the safety of it. And they will also, if you happen to lose that data, and it was from a previous time, when you keep backing up, they save previous backups for you. So they're doing all this, plus they give you 1 gig of storage for email.
It's similar to the Gmail service from Google. They're up to 2.3 gigs.
Literally, it's a local company, like say here in Rochester, New York, for $8 a month.
You can
have your email on there. It's great for you folks if you're traveling. You got to get it files. All you got to do is have internet access. You can get to your email. You can get to your files. And again, if you're worried about it, you can buy additional space if you need it. But it's another safe place that's even off of yours, and they guarantee it.
For the stuff that I do, my writing is my life. The stuff that I write is how I make a living. So I get real paranoid. I used to back it up to CD and stuff like that, and I always thought, it's not good. So I got a second computer. It's kind of my server, and that's got two hard drives that are mirrored in it. So if I write to one, automatically writes to the other. And I thought, okay, now I'm good. And then I thought, now what happens if there's like a fire? you know, in the house. Well, the both machines are in the house.
Power surge, lightning strike.
Lightning strike,
much more
power
common.
Surge. Exactly right. Exactly right. So yeah. Now I also, I'm not, on top of that, every, what is it, 15 minutes or some silly thing, because the computer does it. I don't have to care anymore. It backs it up to one of my machines at RIT. And because I was in the process of setting that up, I also back it up. I run a service called Ask Nick. That's AskNick.com.
Ding.
Everybody get a pen before you leave.
Where's my ding?
Yeah, here's your ding. But I also, that server's in, he just moved me. I think I'm in Las Vegas now. So I back everything up to that machine, too. And it's all over the internet, and it's all automated, so I never even see it. And I may start backing it up to this Onbyte server, too, because my, you know, I write a lot of stuff, but in terms of size, it's all compressed, and it's all text, so it compresses real well. So it doesn't take up much space. And it goes pretty fast. I've got broadband anyway. So, you know, my dad is in my house in two different machines. It's at RIT on one of my servers. It's in Las Vegas, and it's in Philadelphia. And, you know, it's going to have to be, if all of that goes at once, I'm probably not going to care. You know, but that's just the data that I write with. Like I said, there's my daughter's pictures and things like that. I'm not really going to take up gigabytes of space at work or on Jerry's servers or anything like that for that stuff. So it's hard to know when and what and where to back up. But, you know, it's all that return on investment stuff. How much is it worth to you?
How sad would you be to lose everything on your hard drive?
We should probably do a commercial break here anyways. We do it on radio.
Yeah.
For you folks, how many folks actually listen to the show or know about us?
Everyone's hand should go up.
I was going to say.
What are you here for?
Yeah, how many people just happened in and
wandered in?
Well, you know, you can sit there and hope they read about it and that. But, you know, like I said, we've been doing the show for coming up on 16 years now. And of course, Nick has his site, which is
AskNick.com.
Ding.
But yeah, we've been doing it now for 16 years. Just to give you folks a little history. Mm-hmm. Kind of
15 years, 11 months, and 8 days.
We started out, as you well know, in XXI, and then we switched over to WAM. We thought we could get out to a bigger audience. One of the things I get nailed with a lot, and it's, why did you guys move to Sundays? That's so inconvenient. Well, I'll tell you what. The four of us met, and I was the one against it, mostly. And not for me, but for these two guys. They still got family. Nick's got a daughter. Steve's got a small son. Nick's at the market all day on Saturday. Steve's working. Me, I run my own business. My kids are out. The only time I have kids is when my grandchildren come, and I can control that. Go back home. Which doesn't have to be. But it was these two guys that I was worried about because they don't have a wife now. Nick and both of them are working
have
all
a life.
Day
now we have a computer.
On Saturdays, and then Sundays they turn around and go over there. So it was a big change for us. I mean, it's not something that we did very lightly when we made this decision. Yeah, it was inconvenient for us too, but the advantage of going to Sundays was, one, we weren't going to be bumped. There will never be a baseball game or a football game on before 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oddly enough, we've been bumping the Yankees.
Yep.
The Yankees usually have a pregame show, and we've not been airing the pregame show just to keep sound bites on for the full 2 hours, which is excellent management by WAM.
Everybody needs to write to Jeff Howlett.
That's right.
At WAM and thank him. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. And on your website, you still got it on Saturday.
Do I?
Any other?
I believe you.
It's on my list.
No, I
mean it's on his list to do. Oh, Nick is also.
And it doesn't have the frequencies.
You know, not having a life.
Where does it say Saturday?
He's been doing.
On the calendar.
Oh, on the calendar.
Saturday.
Oh, we had another question.
He's also still working on his master's.
I was gonna say we had another question in the back. Danny back there had a question about his computer making some noises at him. Go ahead, stand up.
Wait a minute. I got to tell folks, this kid has been coming to our talks since he was in a stroller. No lie. His parents brought him when we were doing some of the other talks. So in all the listeners, he's probably our oldest. His parents have had him.
He's been listening his whole life, that's literally.
Right. That's right. So none of you are that loyal. Okay, go ahead, Danny. Where are your speakers when it's making noise?
Usually anywhere else besides the far left hand corner.
Away from your monitor? So the closer you get them to your monitor, the more noise they make?
No. But
is the computer on top of the desk though? First.
Towards me,
Here's what you want to do. You've got that computer sitting right up next to here. Your monitor's right there in your keyboard with your speakers?
Or is the computer sitting on the floor?
Is it up on the desk, though?
Yep.
Bingo. Get it down underneath.
Well, there's problems both ways. You're running into something called electromagnetic interference. Remember that. Yeah, big. basically, every electrical device puts off all these waves. And the interference coming off your computer and your monitor is interfering with the speaker. In the speakers, so you're hearing that interference. So the farther away you get your speakers from each other, even because each speaker has a power source, and the farther away from your CRT or get an LCD which has no electromagnetic emissions, and the farther away from your computer you get,
and farther away from your power bar.
Power bar.
If you've got your power bar up on the desk as well.
But the problem with putting the computer on the floor is it generally gets dirtier. Because of the dust coming up off the floor. So there's a couple of companies that make under-the-desk mounts. So it actually hangs from the top of the desk so it doesn't hit the floor and it's out of the way.
Or if your desk is up against the wall and your parents agree, you can mount the speakers up on the wall.
Up on the wall. I had a customer once where their monitor would go nuts and show all these wavy lines a dozen times a day, and we could never figure out the pattern. And then we finally realized that in the next office was the kitchen. So the microwave oven was up against the same wall as the monitor. So anytime someone would run the microwave, it would screw up the monitor. So we had to move the computer to another wall. And then, see, that wall had the main building power trunk, so that didn't work either. So we were moving the computer around in the office to cut down on the interference. Right. But you can also eliminate that type of problem by buying a higher quality speakers called magnetically shielded, and instead of the $20 speakers, they're the $40 speakers, and that can also help as well.
Way cheaper to just mount them on the wall.
Yeah, the $8 speakers probably aren't shielded at all. Yep.
All you need is to get an extender cable for that. Plug it into the wall, and you're done.
What picks up the noise quite often is the amplifier that's probably the speaker that I think is.
Yep. Yep. Swap them around, play around with that.
If I got them a set of speakers where like the amplifier is in the woofer that sits on the floor.
Yep.
And put the box down low on the floor too.
You might even be able to swap the left and right. Yeah.
That's probably your best bet.
Like I say, putting the box down on the floor saves the biggest hassle.
Every time I open up one that's been on the floor though, it's
full of dust
and
dirt.
Here's a cheap and easy way to do it. You're not going to get away from the dust. All a vacuum cleaner is think of it as a big Hoover. Because whether it's sitting on the floor,
the computer,
it's sitting on top of the desk.
Yeah.
It sucks air in the front and blows it out the back. If you ever go to my website, you'll see some of the pictures. And right on my front counter, there's a little square box. Clear box. And that's dust and dirt that I just got out of one computer that I could grab with my hand.
Got my pants filthy today. Opening an old computer.
I packed it down. Literally, it was filled two hands. And I sort of mushed it down and got it into this one container. That's before I took it outside to blow it out. Outside, and look, my neighbors thought there was a dust storm coming through. Because I'm standing back there with the compressor blowing it out. And see all the dirt flying all over the place.
Dried, used up spider webs. The spiders lived there for a few years and then moved on. But yeah, so that is one issue on the floor. So you can either get the under the desk mounts or just a shoebox or something to lift the computer so it's not directly on the floor.
You can take a couple 2x4s, set them on end, and just set it on top of that.
Even companies
just enough that
make wheelie carts. So you can wheel it in and out as you need to get into the computer if you need to.
What I did was I went out and got one of those just little snap-together étagères, the little shelves.
Ooh.
And I left off the top.
I don't know if you talk dirty.
Thank you. That was French, and I don't know French, so I'm not sure what I said, but I apologize to all of you. But I just left off the top shelf. So, you know, it's a little two-shelf thing. The bottom shelf sits up about half a foot off the floor, and I just left off the top shelf, put the computers on that. Now they're up a little bit, which helps a lot. But, you know, it was a few bucks at wherever, Target or wherever it was, and it was not a big deal.
It also helps with the noise of the computer, the power supplies and the fans.
Yep.
So you can keep that. I just turned the radio up louder. But.
And one of the dangers right now, one of the other things that's happening, as you know, the CD-ROM drives have hit their max. They're at 52X, and the burners are 52 by 32 by 52. One of the issues that we're having is because some of these disks, the way they're burning them onto CD and that, you know, the various programs, they're shattering in the drives.
If they're slightly off-center, sometimes it's the label on it. There's a little more ink on one side of the disk than the other, so they're slightly out of balance. And they're literally spinning at 30, 40,000 RPM, and they'll shatter and
if you don't think
disintegrate.
It's happened, stop by my office sometime, and right on the counter, I get this envelope, and it was one of my Microsoft Office 97 CDs. We're loading it back into one of our machines, and all of a sudden we hear, boom, bang, bang. What the heck? I had to slowly open it up and pull out all the shards.
They tested it on MythBusters and were able to show what would happen at about 30,000 RPM. They had a ballistics dummy that got shards of plastic in them. And what happens, it's especially with PCs, you push the eject button, the disc will come spinning out, even if it's still being used. It's still spinning. So even if it doesn't shatter, it's real easy to lift itself up. On the Mac, it won't let you eject it when it's being used, so we don't have to worry too much about that.
There's another article on the net where a gentleman, luckily, he had, and this is why I say move the computer down to the on the floor. Excuse me. You know the CDs where you can just start to put them in and they'll grab it and they'll go in? Guy had moved the computer down below. His son was playing a game, put the CD in. All of a sudden he hears this boom, bang, bang, boom, ding! And he's looking around. Part of the CD was into the wall. And if it had been right up where the kid was, it would have been embedded into his head.
Another problem with putting the computer on the floor with the CD trays, we get a lot of computers in the shop where they've snapped the tray off.
They're not coupled.
They leave the tray ejected when they take a disc out, and then it swivel in their chair or something, and their knee will knock on it and snap the tray off.
And you really never want to leave that tray open anyway, because that collects dust too. And then that dust gets on the CD, and then you
crumbs,
can't read
geez.
It, or cookie crumbs.
What?
Keep them over on your computer.
I'm going to have dinner. Leave me alone.
Rob, you on?
Yeah, who's next? Keep the questions rolling right along. Sir, did you have a question in the back from a few minutes ago? Did you still have a question that you could answer?
I just had two more quick questions. You mentioned different brands.
PC World.
Not specifically. A lot depends on the mechanism in your computer too. Like a Toshiba drive works great with TDK Media, but a Panasonic drive may not work with TDK Media.
If you go to PC World does every year. They'll do a whole magazine on printers and everything else. They don't take any advertising dollars from these various companies, so you know they don't. They can sit there and rate various media, printers, computers, monitors, the whole nine yards.
So they like that stuff.
Yeah.
But
just
don't buy a huge pile of them until you make sure it works well with your computer. Yeah.
I guess one other quick thing, Stephen, how often do you recommend cleaning out a
Laptops
are tricky because you can't get inside of them, but a vacuum cleaner on the top of the keyboard.
And you don't want to use just any vacuum cleaner because then you get static and then you've just blown a $1,500 computer. So they do make computers or vacuum cleaners that are designed to clean keyboards and stuff like that. The real problem is cookie crumbs and stuff
I
like
got
that.
Away from the
I know, I get it. You get it. You
yeah.
get
I'm
it.
I'm going to say he has this real neat thing for laptops that I recommend. It's a handheld by, and it holds, it's two C batteries, and it blows air. So what we usually do is tip the laptop either like on a 45-degree angle upside down and just sit there and blow it and let the stuff fall down below.
I use a little shop vac, so I blow the dust out and then turn the vac around so it sucks the dust back in.
Diane, you had a question?
Yes, and I said to Nick, really, this is my body.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm a Mac person. She's got a fairly new Dell, and she can't, I keep flipping these articles and sending her on, you know, the NSA security tank. She's doing the best she can, but she just can't keep up with the viruses.
Yep.
I mean, she's had the spyware, she's had a virus, she's on dial-up, which I think is safe. Should she have,
Well, ultimately, it's all software. A firewall is very helpful in terms of things like people breaking into your system, but it doesn't stop viruses and spyware from coming in because you invite them in with instant messaging and going to certain websites. Yeah, there you are. Well, get a lock on the door, and then you're done. The first thing she does is buy them their own computer and put Linux on it. And then they'll never have that problem.
Or the Mac.
Or the Mac.
Based on the Unix,
But get them off Internet Explorer. Get them off Outlook Express.
Get them on their own computer. Man, that's justification for her to get herself a more powerful machine and leave that.
Right, and leave them the junk.
Because I've had
The older machine.
I've had a parent that got so upset because the kids kept infecting it. Mm-hmm. Finally came in for the third time within 2.5 months. The parents said kids wanted the computer back. They had to come in and pay for it.
Kids going to pay for it, yep.
All right.
So basically the answer is you can't keep up with it. Yeah.
There's no answer because you're inviting them in. A firewall will prevent people from breaking in. It's like having locks on your doors and windows. That all works great. But if some thief knocks on the door and you open it up and let him in, it doesn't matter how good your locks are.
So you need a firewall, you need an antivirus, you need an anti-spyware, you need an anti-spam, and what was the fifth one you need?
Anti-teenager?
Anti-teenager, yeah. Yeah, stop using IE and OE.
Yeah,
but yeah, so you need all of that, and you need... Yeah, you need to run.
It's free.
Yep. You need to run the anti spyware, the free anti spyware that we have listed on our website, Security Tango, is manual. You run it, you update it, and you run it, and that's the free version. And when you buy the pro versions, it updates itself and it runs itself and prevents new stuff from coming in. But yeah, you need to run the Security Tango every day. Isn't too much, and every hour may not be either if you're on the internet all the time. And the fact that you're on dial-up doesn't necessarily protect you if you're on as often. So, yeah, you connect
to the
internet.
Or if you're the one, if you're downloading email that's got stuff in it, being on dial-up isn't protecting you.
Right. 17 seconds was it for being hacked?
But like you said, if she's got kids, and if like most kids, they're IMing.
Yeah, they are.
Right there. She's fighting a losing battle because all the other kids that are IMing too, there could be a lot of spyware in there because if those kids aren't, she can be very diligent in keeping it clean. But the minute they get back on and she starts IMing these other kids, bam, it all comes right back in. She's got to clean it all over again because she could be doing her house cleaning, but that's saying that everybody else is doing theirs. And a lot of folks aren't. If they were, I wouldn't be in business. Because right now, believe it or not, 60% of my business right now has turned into cleaning out spyware, viruses, and spam. That's why my wife developed that list that's also on the site for a step-by-step procedure of running Antiware and Spyware.
My daughter's 13. Help me. Let me go back. My daughter's 13. And
his hair is thinning out now?
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, 13 years ago I had a full head of black hair. My daughter, first I got her a Linux laptop, so she's, none of the nonsense. It has no wireless, so she can't be on the internet except in the computer room with me. And one day I'm sitting there working, she's working at her machine, and she leans over very casually, thinking I'm working so hard I won't pay attention to what she says. Dad, could I get instant messaging? I said, sure, honey. No, really, Dad, I need a... What? I said, sure, but here's the deal. You're going to get the instant messenger I give you, which will talk to everybody's instant messenger but won't accept files. So none of her friends can send her a file. Secondly, every single... Because this is my instant messaging service at the College of Business. Everything that you type and that they type gets recorded.
And as a parent, that's something you can do in your instant messaging program that the kids use. You can log it. There's a preference in the program to the better ones is there's a password protect the log so that everything they type is logged and you can go back and see what they've done.
If you log it, can you actually find out where things are coming in?
Well, yeah, but it's too late by then. That's not why I log it. I log it in case. Well, so is mine.
Yeah.
That's not the point. The point is the other people out there.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with my daughter.
And that client is called Jabber, and it will talk to all of the other instant messaging clients, AIM and Yahoo and MSN, but won't allow the spyware and viruses to make it through as easily.
Right. So that's a good choice for her as well, because it's just harder to get stuff. Not that you can't get stuff, it's just harder.
Do you have a question?
Anyway, for the sake of time, maybe we should just kind of limit one question, and then you all are familiar with the website. First of all, is anybody not familiar with Security Tango? Is it, you guys all heard of securitytango.com? Check it out, and these guys can talk a little bit more about it, but I still run into people that I'm telling them about the website, and they think it's a beautiful thing, and they're like, it's really free, you know. So any other questions? There's tons of great user groups and forums on Soundbites. You can go and ask questions, but we only got about an hour left, so let's keep it to the one question.
Yeah, just tell me, what are those five things that you should do to put in your computer for antivirus?
Antivirus, anti-spam, anti-spyware, firewall, and what was the fifth one? Ad blocker.
Ad blocker.
Pop-up blocker.
Pop-up blockers.
Yep.
Now, many of us do that with two programs, Firefox, Thunderbird. That kind of does it all for me. I don't use Internet Explorer. I do not use Outlook Express or Outlook itself. In fact, I don't even use Windows, but if I can avoid it. But if you run a program, for example, actually my main email program runs on Windows. It's Eudora. And for $30 a year, I run a product called SpamNix, SpamNix. And it's basically a plug-in to Eudora for a product called Spam Assassin, which is the premier spam killer. Everything now, it takes time to do this, and the faster your system is, the faster it'll happen. But every email I get, it scans it. And there are certain points that it gives to things. You know, if it has the words Viagra or mortgage or whatever, you know, those get certain points. And if I go over a certain point limit, it's spam.
What if I want a low mortgage rate?
Then you put it in your whitelist and say, I want mortgage, you know, instead of like getting a 20, it's a negative 20. So that it never gets over 20 that way because it's got mortgage in it and I'm looking for mortgage. So that works out. And that runs right in Eudora, and I don't think and I'm not joking about this, I average easily 5,000 email messages every single day.
Wow.
And I maybe see a dozen spam items. Yeah. The rest of them are all, I empty my trash 4 times a day.
About 3,000 in the morning for me.
Yeah. Wow. Go ahead.
Dave,
wait a minute, I think this young lady was
next. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I didn't put it on. Somebody came over because I was concerned about my daughter using G12. So I was really concerned about, I got a virus through it and all that. Even the Trillium helped me with seeing who she's talking to and all that. But no, don't use that. The Jabber is definitely.
Let me tell you, Trillium is the devil's child. It is a horrible piece of software. I hate it. Mainly I hate it because every single day for almost a year, let's talk about spam, I got an email from Trillian telling me how great their product was and I should buy it. I called them and complained to them. I wrote letters to them. My lawyer wrote letters to them. That's how angry I got about this. And they kept saying, we don't see you in the system. We don't know where the letters are coming from. I said, I don't care if they don't stop. We're going to go to court. And we sent them a registered letter. My lawyer sent them a registered letter. The next day they stopped. I'm sure it was coincidence. but in the product itself used to have a bunch of adware, not adware, the one that kills stuff, but adware, ads that came with it, and it would pop stuff up because that's how they pay for it. That's why it's free for you, because you load a whole bunch of other, what's the word I'm looking for, the technical term, crap, in along with it. And so you, because you do that, because that's something, you know what, folks, I know we all do this because it's easy and fast and convenient. When we go to load something, there's like 3-4 screens. We go click, 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 and wait for it to finish loading. One of those clicks is what's called the end user license agreement. And if you read the one for Trillian, or in fact many of them, they'll say, and by clicking on this, you agree that we load helper programs or
marketing
extra
data.
Programs, marketing data. We want to, you know, keep track of your marketing data. And it's all this other junk that comes in along with it, and you've agreed to it. So it's not illegal. They didn't sneak it onto your system. They told you right out. It's not their fault if you didn't read it. Your lawyer will tell you the same thing. Whenever you go to get a mortgage, your lawyer says, read this first.
But if you don't accept it, then you can't load it.
That's exactly right. But you know what? You got to make your choice.
Okay. So you'll find a better program that doesn't have that stuff in it.
Jabber is the technology. There are about 1,000 clients. If you go to jabber.org and look at the client list, you'll find clients for Windows and the Mac and Linux and your Palm Pilot and everything else, and you can pick any one of them.
I'm probably the biggest computer literate, so basically people help me out and say, okay, if you want to do this, let's put Trillian on. What do you want to do? They're telling me how to get done what I want done.
Right.
Well, if you want to go track where she's going and see who she's talking to and everything else on screen, and like you say, you're an end user. You want something that's going to be very simple, very user-friendly. There's a product called eBlaster. eBlaster will allow you to literally, it's password protected. So when the machine turns on, it gets loaded. You are the one that will set up the controls to either turn it on or turn it off. And if your child is into Instant Messenger, any of the IM programs and everything else, everything that is typed into the screen, it's saved to a log.
Right.
She cannot delete that log. She will not see that log. He or she will not see that log. Only you, by logging back in through the security, because you click on the program, and you've got to have the password, username and password, make it unique, you know, not their name. You will be able to get in there and see the log of everything that was literally typed on the screen. And nowadays, matter of fact, we just went to a seminar. It was a big seminar, not to scare anybody, but one thing that is becoming very widespread, and I was even shocked at the number of people that are out there with this is child porn. And the lurkers, the people that are out there lurking, thinking that, oh, they're talking to another 14-year-old person.
And how many 13-year-old girls have we seen whose screen name is Hot Sexy Mama or something? Yeah.
Or these others. As a matter of fact, there was a girl in this one program that we went to that the Sheriff's Department and Missing and Exploited Children put on. This one young lady, young girl, 13 years old, talked about her experience, how she thought she was talking to this other kid who was 14 years old. Turned out it was a 56-year-old man. He was then charged with over 96 different meetings with kids, possessing over, you ready for this? 60,000 porn pictures on his computer. And he was just getting into the club. Because to get into the club, you have to submit 500. You know, computers are great, folks, and I don't want to scare you, but as parents, you also have to. You know, I hate it, and all three of us have been preaching it for the longest time. Don't keep the computer up in the kids' room. get it down into a local area, whereas you as a parent, you can be walking by. Something's on that screen, and the screen goes there. What were you looking at? Bring it up. I had one parent, Noah, email me, said, well, my 14-year-old son has my old laptop. And evidently, he put a password on it. Now he won't let me into it. My response back to him was, take the laptop away. Either you get the password or he doesn't get the laptop.
It's the way it has to be. You got to be the parent. You know, and I get, it breaks my heart. I get calls from parents all the time. What do I do? What technology thing is there? What technological thing is there to help me with this? And I keep telling them there's no technology. You got to be the parent. And it's very hard, and I get that. I am one, and I get that. Like I said, my daughter has a laptop. I was able to get a very inexpensive one for her. It has no wireless. So if she wants to take it in her room, she can write her papers and do her homework. Great, not a problem. You want to get on the internet, it's you and me in the computer room.
And that is good. She has that stuff in her room. She does her homework and everything on the computer. She has up there. We have one computer hooked up to the internet. It's in my living room.
Yep.
And the bottom line is that...
That does my heart good. You don't know. You know, I like to say, we've been preaching this for years. And like Nick said, you know, we hear a lot of parents very upset. Because I had a friend... Literally, you know, was doing this stuff on the internet. She took off and married this guy in Washington. And the parents were heart sick. I went over there and I was able to dig out and find out where the kid was going. But, you know, it's because they weren't doing it in a local area. She was tied up in a room.
No,
you've got to have it down
good
in
for
a
you.
Local area.
Yep.
That's
if
excellent.
If you have a fire in the living room, she can then go online. And if we're not in the living room,
yeah, they're just they're less likely to try something.
So it's not, it's just that I'm worried about what's getting into my computer more so than what she's saying.
Right, right, and I realize that. But and the problem is it's a never ending battle.
And if I put this or this e-blaster, that's gonna help me prevent things coming in.
Bless you. You're done.
Yeah,
and it's going to happen.
Well, that's one of the things that I'll mention now. I'll get on my soapbox for a minute. Get a Mac. We have switched a lot of PC users over to Mac because there are no viruses, there are no spyware, there are no cracks, there are no Trojan horses. None of the stuff you have to worry about on an hourly basis with Windows. And this is the Mac that Apple is producing for that type of market. This is the Mac Mini. This is the whole computer. This is the whole computer, yep, optical drive in the front, all the plug holes in the back. Starts at $500, so it's relatively inexpensive. Plug it into the monitor you've already got, or you can get a fairly cheap monitor for it as well. Don't worry about viruses, don't worry about spyware. Apple has built in a lot of the parental controls, so you can set it up for a child's account, so that they can only go to websites you put in the bookmark list. They can only IM people you put in their IM list. And you don't have to worry as much about it as you do with Windows. And you can still share data with Windows if you need to.
If you have IM coming in, will it bring in its viruses?
A Windows virus could be downloaded into a Mac. Nothing will happen because it's Windows code. It won't execute on a Mac.
Same thing under Linux.
Under Unix, yeah. And the Mac is basically a Unix computer with a pretty icon interface to make it easy to use.
In general, for people who consider themselves not real computer geniuses, a Mac is a great choice. You can do everything you want to do much more safely than under Windows. You can run all the same programs that you can under Windows. The big difference is you have a lot less concern about viruses and things like that. Now you still have all the parental things, you know. You right, right. That's not going to change. But in terms of
why aren't they outselling them?
Well, they are, but not. Well, if I were Steve Jobs, I wouldn't be here. But I would be selling it specifically on that point. I would say, look, you're a parent. You don't know a lot about computers. Your kids know more about computers than you do. How do you keep your machine safe? This is the kid right here.
It does show up in the mainstream press. Walt Mossberg has written a bunch of articles in the Wall Street Journal about 60,000 reasons to buy a Mac, because that's the number of PC viruses there were yesterday. David Pogue in the New York Times. Apple itself has never had that good of a marketing campaign, and we've been kicking them for years about it. But a lot goes back 20 years with the advent of the PC, is that the Apple machines were outselling PCs until IBM started making a PC, and IBM had this huge marketing force for the IBM mainframes everyone had in their basement. So all the companies bought IBM PCs on their desk to connect into their IBM mainframe because of the IBM sales force. Then the average people working there bought PC clones because they were cheaper than a name IBM brand PC, and they bought PC clones so they could steal all their software from work. And it's proliferated since that the PCs have gotten cheaper because there are so many more vendors. That's also a huge problem because there are so many PC vendors in so many different areas. It makes things difficult to work with. In fact, Dave's got a great story about PC World magazine rated all the different pieces, motherboard, video card, hard drive, and a customer bought the highest rated product, put a computer together, nothing worked, because they won't talk to each other, where Apple has a little more control over the hardware and the software.
Okay, but I guess what I don't get is we ought to be buying an Apple, what you're saying.
Basically. But a lot goes into your support network, too, who you can call for help.
Okay, I can do anything with that. You can do with Windows and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
On a Dell.
In fact, this Dell isn't even running Windows.
It's running Linux.
Okay, but I can receive things from people who have Windows.
Yep.
No problem.
Yep. Because the Internet was created on Unix. The fact that it works with Windows is a hack to begin with.
I got a 60. I'm not a Mac user, but when my wife and I went to Gallery of Mall this past winter and went in the Apple store, we spent about an hour and a half.
Drooling.
It's a beautiful place. If you're really interested, take the drive up to Buffalo, the Gallery of Mall, and go in the store. The people there are really, really mm-hmm. outgoing. They yeah. love to show the product.
Can also come and visit any of my three stores I have in town.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah. And actually, Apple is opening their own store in Eastview Mall later this month.
Okay. I didn't know. We stumbled yep. on it in the Gallery of Mall.
Yeah,
but they really are nice products.
Did we ever get to her?
Yep.
Okay, it's what I was talking to you about.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after.
Oh.
We got to do that after.
Oh.
Yeah, it's longer. That's a longer.
Let's try to get some folks in the back.
I need to know.
In the green in the back. No.
Well, yeah, it's more expensive to get because you can't steal it from your buddies as easily. But in terms of the actual cost for the, if you were going out to buy one or the other,
it's the same cost as the PC version in most cases. You will find though, you go into a retail store, they're going to have a lot more PC software than they are Mac software. In many cases, both versions come in the same box. And you'll find it on the PC shelf rather than the Mac shelf. So looking at the system requirements. Because a lot of programs will work on both sides because that's the way they're written. The programming is very similar between them. But, yeah, you'd have to buy a Mac-specific version or a PC-specific
version. The big difference is you're always hearing, PCs have a lot more software than the Macs.
Yeah.
That's true in terms of actual numbers. They've got 140 different word processors.
We only have 10.
Right. So, but
you
how many
need,
word processors
yeah, you
do you
only
get
need
about?
One.
The same thing is true on the Linux side. How many word processors are there? Maybe 20. I use one.
But the other key question that we always tell folks, because it's a religious thing,
yep.
is where are you going to get your support? If you have questions, in the middle of the night or on the weekend, and you go to the Mac or the PC side, and all your folks are the opposite, for the support and all that. That's the other key thing that you've got to ask.
That's
yourself.
The radio shows, the users groups. The Apple Cider users group meets the second Wednesday of the month at East High. The Club Mac users group meets the second Tuesday of the month at the town hall next door. And then the PC users groups, their meetings, they usually meet the second Tuesday of the month. Their meetings shift month to month. Finding free meeting space is getting tricky these days. So there's a lot of other places for support rather than going to the back to the store or calling an 800 number. And speaking for Dave and I, as store owners, one of the things we stress is face-to-face meeting. You know, call us, you know, come into our stores. We'll help you decide what's best for you. It's not some anonymous voice at the end of the phone. When you need service on your computer, you don't have to mail it off to somebody. You can bring it back to us as well.
Think globally, yeah. Buy locally.
Yeah. Let's get somebody on this side for a minute.
Yeah.
You got the Yahoo toolbar?
Oh, the Yahoo toolbar.
Right. Full of spyware.
Yep.
Any of those toolbar things, Yahoo has one, Google has one, there's Bonzi Buddy, there's like 100 of these things. They're all spyware. They're gathering statistics and sending them. What happens is you log on and you go look at a car club, all of a sudden you're seeing all these ads for cars because they've tracked you. And that's what all of these things do. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
Go into the ad remove program.
If you're lucky, you can uninstall it.
Down at the bottom, you'll see Yahoo toolbar.
A lot of times, though, that will uninstall the toolbar, but leave all the marketing crap and all the spyware behind.
That technical term again. So what you need to do is you need to, once you've done that, then you're going to need to dance the security tango to get rid of all the junk that was left behind.
Yeah. C++ is still big. Java is getting to be real big. Because it's cross-platform. It was developed by Sun. It will run under Unix, Windows, or Mac. So one program can run on all three platforms without much of a major rewrite. And that's also a real big language for web pages. You know, the web stuff is where a lot of newest development is happening. So Java engines in the web. And then Flash... programming for animations on the web is also getting to be very big.
When you go in a store, it seems you don't see much, or it looks like the interest isn't there.
Retail stores sell what sells, and programming environments don't sell.
It used to be that everybody wanted to program in BASIC. Everybody wanted to program, and BASIC came with the machine.
You
had
to program. Right. There weren't any programs you could buy off the shelf, so you wrote your own when you got your computer.
Right, and if you bought any computer, a home hobbyist computer came with BASIC. So there's lots of stuff for BASIC, and Visual BASIC came along and blah, blah, blah. But then now the computers don't come with them anymore, so if you wanted, well, Linux boxes do, but none of the others do. And so if you want to program in them, you have to go out and buy a language. But we're really kind of getting away from... people programming their own stuff, and they're turning into commodity boxes. You know, you don't want to replace the Freon, although they don't use that anymore, in your refrigerator. You just want it to run. You just want the light to come on every time you open the door. And that's what their appliances now. People don't program them. You know, you need to go to special. You go to RIT or the U of R to find programming.
Because then you get the compiler, like the old COBOL, Fortran.
Right. And so the big thing now is you go on the net, and you'll find free... compilers and free editors and programming help for writing programs and not need to buy an actual retail package.
If you go to a big enough bookstore, we were at Barnes & Noble the other day, so we could check that we're on the list for the new Harry Potter book on Friday. I shouldn't say that. We're getting two copies, one for my daughter, one for me, so we don't have to fight. So she can read it first, too. But there is a whole section upstairs on programming languages. And you'll find a lot of Java and a lot of C, and then a lot of specialized stuff for doing graphics and things like that. But big sections on Java, big sections on C.
Okay,
I'm
going to get back on the other side.
Question for you here.
is I signed up for StreamLink, but post to post, and when I tried to download the MP3, the Windows Media came up, and it downloaded it fine. Problem is, I have no idea where it downloaded it to. So therefore, that's... I'm going to play it back. I got about 15 hours worth of programming, but...
And that's a huge problem for most computer users, is you click a link and it downloads. Most people have no idea where things are being downloaded to. In that program, there's a default download folder where it downloads to by itself. So if you go into the Windows Media Preferences, you should be able to find where that download folder is. Now, both the Mac and Windows have tried to make that a little easier by either downloading things directly to the desktop or creating a My Downloads folder inside your Documents folder.
No, it's not in My Downloads.
But if, all right, here's a... Here's
it might be, well, with Windows Media Player, it might be in the My Music folder.
But if you want to try to find it, you can do a search. You know the particular day that you downloaded it?
Right. I downloaded it on July 4th.
All right. That's all you need to know.
Find
you
file
can go
modified
in, you
July 4th.
Go into a search. If you're running Windows XP, go into search. And you can search by date. And you can specify a certain date. And say, show me all the files on that particular date that are new or have changed. Mm-hmm. And you will then see that file. And they'll display it by type. And it's probably the only MP3 file that you downloaded that day.
Yep.
It'll be listed right there. And it'll show you where it's hidden.
Now, Windows Media Player should put it in its own playlist. Because it's part of the Windows Media Player is an archive, is a jukebox.
Yeah, do a search by that specific date, and it'll show you all the files that changed on that date. And one of the items is file type. Just sort by file type, and you'll see it right there.
So look, open your web browser, open your Media Player, look through the preferences, and find the download folder, so you can find things later after you download them. Yeah, if you saw the name of the file coming through, you can do a search for that specific file name. But if you didn't catch the file name, then it would be .mp3, something.mp3, dated July 4th. There's also an issue that some of the music services, you don't actually download the music. It streams the music. So you can't play it again unless you reconnect to the Internet and restart the stream.
This is a music service. This is, the radio program.
Mm-hmm.
That they play at night on WHAM. And, of course, like most people, I'm sleeping at night, and where I live,
yep.
Of course, WHAM doesn't come in.
Well, that's... Now, there's a new emerging technology called podcasting, designed specifically for people like that, that can publish their own radio show on the Internet, and you use a podcast program like iTunes or iPodder. Generally, part of the way the technology was designed is that someone uploads their audio file, you download it with this podcast program, and then sync it into your MP3 player or iPod, so you can listen to it away from your computer. So a lot of people are starting podcasting, and in fact, Apple just opened the new podcast section on their music store for Mac and Windows, signed up 1 million subscribers in 2 days, and have tens of thousands of audio files. Music and commentary and political commentary, technical commentary, and even completely non-computer stuff available. In fact, someone I was going to mention that on the show Sunday, Nick. I went to if you do have your own podcast, you can submit your podcast to Apple, and they will list it on the store for Mac and Windows users to see. Someone else already submitted us, so whoever did that, thanks.
Gary Lawn is that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I figured it would be Sal, because he's the iPod guy.
Well, we only got a few more minutes. Rob, why don't you grab a couple more questions?
Yep.
We got to be out of here by 8:30, so we can take maybe a couple more questions. We only got about 6 more minutes.
Yep. Gentleman in the green.
I just touched on this before. Can you give a primer on the newer CD, DVD, what all this means with the double layer? And now, you talked before about the 32X, 52X.
Mm-hmm. That's the rotational speed. The faster it spins, the faster you can put data. DVD, right. CD is 52X.
Okay.
DVD is now up to 16X. And X is an hour-ish. So the newest DVD drives are 16X. Double layer which means it writes two tracks on the disk, so you can get 8 gigabytes of data. And then there are plus and minus R and RW. So you get all those letters together, and you've got a drive that can read and write pretty much anything.
The problem is reading it back in something else. What really counts is the DVD player that you're trying if you're doing like a movie or something and you want to put it in a regular DVD player, most of them can't do the plus, minus, this, that, thing, something. So you want to pay attention to the manual of the device you're writing to, you're writing for, rather, and say, okay, if I'm creating a video or a music CD or whatever that I want to play in my DVD player, I have to burn it in on a medium that thing will recognize.
And minus R is the most common.
Right. If it's just for your machine, if it's like backing up data and things like that, then get whatever you want. It really doesn't matter. You can write to it. RW means it's rewritable.
Which means you erase it and write to it again. It's not like a hard drive where you can write to it and then read from it and then write to it again. The RW, same for CD RW, you erase it and write to it again.
Unless you do a multi-session.
Well, multi-session is another step. You write a chunk of data to it, then you write another chunk of data to it. So the first chunk is E and the second chunk is F. So, or you have special burning software, Roxio's Direct CD allows you to fake a CD into thinking it's a hard drive and randomly rewrite on it. But then that disk will not be readable by anybody else. They have to have that program.
But if you have a multi-format DVD writer, mm-hmm. wouldn't that, if let's say you've got a movie and you put it on that, if it's multi-format, doesn't that...
Well, right, but now you can't play that disk in a regular DVD player is what we're saying.
Yeah, it depends on who you give the disk to play that disk. If you're just going to use it on your own computer, it doesn't matter what format.
Okay, well, my friend of mine's got that Media Center PC, and she's mm-hmm. got that. And she said, now this is what she told me, it's multi-format, so it plays plus
right.
and minus.
Because that's a right. computer, not a DVD player.
But in other words, if she's got a minus DVD player, because it writes in plus and minus, won't it play on her machine?
It depends because
she has a computer. If she has a plus minus drive in her computer, then it will read a plus or minus disk.
But if you say to me, and I just got a plain old vanilla run the mill DVD player
on your television to watch a movie on your television, you have to use minus R.
You give it to me, and it's going to be a good coaster.
So how does she know? Is there a setting in there?
Minus R. She's got to buy disks that say minus R. It's the disk that she buys, not the drive that she burns it in.
Okay.
She buys disks that say minus R, burns them.
There'll be plus.
So okay. Make sure they're just CD, DVD minus R, okay. And you're good to go.
That's what I wanted to know.
We got time for one more question. Anybody who has not asked a question yet, Quentin?
I have Roxio.
Sure.
How often can I rewrite on a CD?
Until it stops working.
About
100 times.
No, they say you can erase and rewrite 500 times.
Again, it depends on the quality of the media.
That was
going to
be the qualifier that I was going to say. Yeah.
But
I
don't trust them over 100 personally.
Yeah, you and me both.
But yeah, they say up to 500. I say 100.
And the R disks are so much cheaper than the RW disks anyway. It's usually easier just to burn another R disk and then worry about erasing an RW.
Yeah, I buy a sack of 100.
The other thing that's getting really popular now, as I reach into my pocket, flash drives.
This is
equivalent to 200 floppy disks, about a quarter of a CD, because this is only a 256 meg version. You get a 1 gig flash drive, it is randomly rewritable, so you can write and read and edit and carry it from computer to computer very easily. Neck lanyard, pocket.
You do want to be a little careful with it.
If I have a regular CD and I close it out to be read on any other computer, mm-hmm. that is it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some programs call it close the session or finalize the disk, something like that. Then other computers can read it also.
All right, well, that wraps it up for us. If anybody didn't get their question answered, I think you can probably go to the website, email any one of these.
Soundbitesnet.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Some woman wrote to me and said, I spent an hour in the wrong places, and why don't you tell us it's with a Y? So now every week I mention it. I don't know who Francis is. She just said she signed it Francis, and so I'm spelled it in the female way, so I'm assuming it's a woman, and so that's who she is now. It says Francis would like us to remind you that.
I thought it was somebody at the station.
No, I have no idea who Francis is. She could be sitting in this room, I wouldn't have any idea.
On behalf of WHAM, thank you very much for listening to us each and every week. We work very hard to bring you a great show, and thank you to the Greece Library as well. I'd ask that you give these guys about 5 minutes before you bombard the table with more questions. Take some pens. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, everybody can have a pen. Grab a pen.
Why doesn't we have a Mac?
I have a Linux box.
The Mac is also a Unix box with a different interface on the top.
What was it, the Yahoo?
So with his Unix is just as safe
it's
as my Mac.
College sports broadcasting on Yahoo.
Didn't he say give us 5 minutes before you start? Did he say that?
But no, what I was going to say is if you can go to that site.
All right, where is orange, okay.
Sports broadcasting.
Yeah,
what is
it? I just wanted to get it up. So
what's it called?
It's Yahoo.com. Can we get a green from my little brother?
I got what's there.
Yep, that's all.
Spam is a tasty meat product from Hormel Foods. Spam is junk email.
Sports broadcasting.
So it's unsolicited commercial email is the is sort of the official terminology. No one says that though. They all say spam, which Hormel is very mad about. So that's what spam is. Spyware are programs that get downloaded into your PC when you go to a website, or sometimes from an email.
You have to plug your monitor to it.
So that run in the background watching what you're doing, either watching what websites you go to, watching what things you download.
What's pop-up?
It looks like a couple of pounds.
When you go to a website, sometimes a window pops up with an advertisement. The pop-up blocker doesn't pop up.
Okay. So the spyware is the worst.
Yeah. Yep. No. Now this is available in a 40 gig model or an 80 gig model.
This is where the salesman Steve kicks in.
And I got some data sheets on it as well.
What's that?
So you've got headphones jack, FireWire two USB ports, digital video output, so will drive a digital monitor or an analog monitor.
What version?
You can produce pretty much
any
monitor
you want.
Yeah, but
what are you using for your
modem? High speed Ethernet, so you can get into broadband and or networking. That's a secure. That's the power side.
Let's not get off on that.
Because they're so
small, they've added
the
laptop
security locks.
The weekly
cable chain on your desk so it doesn't wander away. $500. And that's it's a 1200 megahertz IBM G4.
Stream music to you.
Which is about equivalent to a 2.5 gigahertz Pentium 4. And with the 40 gig drive. Or there's a 1.4 gigahertz model with an 80 gig drive. And that's
$600.
Yeah, I know. I think $995.
Well, they're in
the
any analog or digital monitor.
There it is, live college sports action.
Yeah. Wireless is about $100 extra.
Well, why don't you just type
there
it in
are
that way? I don't know.
Better models if you're looking at, if you're going to buy a monitor yourself, you know, a decent, everyone likes flat panels these days.
Wait, Nick,
17-inch flat panel is about $300.
Was right on.
If you want the wireless, that's another $100.
That was very good. I know you're a lot younger than me, so, but you do remember
each.
Back when it was...
So, you know, you can get up to $1,000 configuring this model.
I don't, I'm not any younger.
Or
all right,
Apple makes a product called the iMac,
video? Is that it?
Which
yeah.
is a G5 processor, the next generation better processor. 17-inch widescreen flat panel monitor built in, wireless built in for $1,300. So it adds all the stuff you might upgrade this machine with. This is specifically marketed at people who are upgrading an old computer or switching from Windows, already have the keyboard, mouse, and monitor, plugging into a hard wire so you don't need to add $100 for wireless. So it's a very inexpensive entry-level computer.
So I can use my keyboard that I have with my
PC. If it's a USB keyboard. If it's PS2, then there's a $5 adapter that will convert PS2 to USB. In fact, most of the PS2 keyboards in the last 3 or 4 years are, especially the PS2 mice, come with the USB adapter already in it. Because all the PCs are shifting toward USB as well.
Okay. One question here. Now, you said you could plug any monitor in this?
Yep.
Where? I noticed the plug in the back there. This doesn't look like a monitor.
This is a digital video port. We'll take any standard digital monitor. And it comes with an adapter for standard analog mounted.
Okay, that's what it is.
So this
mine is an analog monitor. Then,
this is a very high-end digital video interface. You usually don't see this until you get into the $1,000 PCs that has the digital video interface. Digital monitors are brighter and sharper and crisper than analog monitors, but a little more expensive.
That's because they're newer.
They're better and newer, right.
I mean, let's face it, there's no way in the world you could keep up with the way the technology's going.
Yep.
I mean, like, I just built a unit now with 3-gig processor. Mm-hmm. Undoubtedly, now they've gone to double-core processors.
Yeah, the dual-core 3.06 is out.
Yeah, so...
Yep.
I mean, even this is probably obsolete before it was even put in the shelf.
Well, it was marketed, designed and marketed at a lower level. So it's using the older G4 processor instead of the newer IBM G5 processor.
Right.
And that also makes it cheaper.
It's just it's a beautiful idea.
For people that have older computers that are only 300, 400, 500 megahertz, even up to 1,000 megahertz, you can get a fairly decent computer for, you know, $500.
Okay, now, can you network one of these with an IBM computer?
Sure. Yep. Networking, file sharing.
Yeah, it requires Windows Media Player, real or QuickTime, none of which I have installed here.
Can I get one of these, let's say, for down in the kitchen? I love that size. And I could hook it on the network.
No problem. A lot of people are also using it as a home media center. Put it on your television. And store your movies on it, store your music on it, and then drive your television with it. So it's almost the multimedia PC that Microsoft is selling. Microsoft is
selling
the multimedia PC for the home media center. So this is Apple's version of it. So you can use it as a music jukebox.
That's where I think the problem lies right now.
As a movie storage location and play movies on your television.
Actually, you're pretty much correct, though, because Bill Gates did buy a big chunk of Apple.
Right.
Remember?
No, they got $150 million of non-voting shares.
I think there's your problem. What you need to do is get the latest.
We're not sure how much he still has. Yep.
Okay, so that's the guy who kind of
no problem.
Right. We were really impressed.
Yep. Very clean and modern. Very expensive retail store.
But I had no intention of buying
I got Tom Recorder, I bought that.
It's a great product.
Okay, but now they don't do anything.
Yep.
Somebody on your website said to use Audacity. Can I use Audacity?
Some of the PC users we talked to get impressed because it's a command line.
Will record.
So, I've got a command line. I can type commands.
Well, then once it's over, then you bring
it
up.
So, it is a command line interface if you want to type your commands.
That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, this is a 12-inch PowerBook. Yeah, this starts... 1500, because this is the business model. So it's a faster processor, a better screen, better video card. The 12-inch iBook is the consumer model, and that starts at under 1,000.
Yeah, that's what I saw. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a white plastic case.
Right.
And the PowerBook is the silver aluminum.
Well, JPEG is just the pictures.
It's open now. Yeah, we've been there about 6 months now.
So it's
a DVD.
Yeah, Apple is opening their own retail store. I think
right. And the problem is, now we go back to her problem, which is there are DVD players that will play.
And annoyingly enough, they picked this.
And they'll bring it like a slideshow. They'll bring it.
So we're going to be moving it sort of the other end.
But that's dependent on the DVD player, not on.
People are going to the Apple Store. They will see some DVD
players just playing. Well, we saw a little bit about that. We're outside the Apple Store. We might get them before they go in.
Yeah, right.
And we can get them if they come
right
out
there.
And sell them the stuff they didn't get yet.
You get the local support.
That's the problem right there.
Yeah, and the Apple Store can't do any service. We still do have a warranty service officer, so we can do all the Apple warranty service.
If they buy it there, they can have a service with you.
Pardon?
Our DVD player will play it, but this is straightforward.
Right, and that's why.
It's just a cheap player, yeah.
Well, it's a different player.
Okay. Steve, I gotta come over and say hi. I haven't seen you in a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember what name you called me for.
Yeah.
Retired in 98. They were all PC systems.
They used to be one of the biggest Mac bases, too.
In fact, I had a Mac one time.
Have you danced the tango?
They just decided to switch over just funny, as you said. So how'd they
go?
Generally speaking, what is something like that?
I'm a minority owner,
There's some virus.
I remember you used to be running way out in the country there. Is that the
Mendham store? Yeah. we're actually going to be moving the Menden store into Victor next month. We're going to be right on 251. So a little easier to find us than in and around behind the middle building.
Either that or you had a trial version and it's expired.
I'm actually the one that put Pat Lewis up in contact. You wanted me to come and do some kind of technology. I'm not your person. You guys could.
I'm a big fan of Mac.
Thanks for coming.
The new AVG, which is free. Or you can pay for it and get, you know.
Sure. Oh, I forgot to mention that. Anyone looking for a job? Sales, service, administration, tech support?
First off, well, we're hiring. On the security tech website.
Administration. Nice to meet you.
Resume. Yeah. Administration. Is a resume?
Sure.
Sales at jessegroup.com? Yep.
Administration doing what?
Answering phones, light bookkeeping, order entry, yep.
Well, we're not inserting that on Monday in the new place. Yeah. I'll let you know.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm
interested
in
Menden. We're going to be moving that to Victor next month, which is only about a mile away.
Right.
But it's going to be right on 251.
Never.
A couple of miles past
the mall.
Yep.
Well, you're going to keep getting them. But if you unsubscribe, all that tells them is there's a live body out there that's clicking on links.
But I still get them, whether I. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I haven't unsubscribed. Better keep it all. I still keep getting them.
Yeah, unsubscribe is not going to. Unsubscribe will make it worse.
Okay.
It's that simple.
So
unsubscribe will make it
worse. So if you have two DVDs connected to each other, you're using generally.
Exactly what you got to do. Thanks. Just drop it. There
you go.
It's very hard to beat Dell right now.
What hours are you
saying? Very hard. The prices are
Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 4.
The Celeron is okay if you're not going to do a lot of stuff.
Yep. All the
Celeron is fine.
Lots of accessories, lots of software.
It's not a reliability.
No, it's just getting slower.
I'm normally at the Menden store. Let me see if the lights are still on at our store.
I don't know if you remember. You came and spoke at ISA.
Yes, I did. Yes,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah, it was good.
7 o'clock.
Yes,
I think I stopped the camera at 7. There it is.
I didn't know you
so there's our store.
20 years.
My wife and I almost stopped the car.
Yeah, I did. I spent 20 years in professional aid.
Yeah.
Hi there.
Thanks. Familiar with Linux from scratch?
Yeah, sure. My pleasure. Yes, familiar with it. Not a guru at it at all.
So I've only read the Linux from scratch. Linux from scratch.
Right.
Is there explanations on how to do it? Like, burn it, set it up so you can reinstall it automatically?
There's no real automated install. Like, just you can burn a CD and install from there.
Like, burn all the packages?
Right.
Okay.
Right, and basically capture the install process, and that becomes a script that runs the next one. Basically how that works. Linux from scratch is pretty cool. If you're looking to create a full-fledged thing, grab Ubuntu. They'll send you free CDs in packs of 10. Literally. Ubuntu, UBUNTU, that's what I'm running on this thing. Free CDs. UBUNTU, Ubuntu.
There's the iPod software restore program. Doesn't work. Could be the hard drive failing. If it's still under warranty, you can send it into Apple. Warping? Wow.
I called and said, it's warping. I'm not pressing any pressure on it. I haven't even dented it. And it just kept warping.
Yeah.
over heating and everything. That's not you. Yeah,
the charge
my girlfriend signed for a Mac.
It's like a
Performa. It won't boot.
The solution for your problem
has a boot. Does it chime?
Yeah, generally.
Go to our screen. Go to our clicker. Go to our sales and
what they're telling you, if you want to replace it, then it will be
the battery. Why is the battery? A lot of the older computers, the battery wears out and prevents it from booting right.
It goes up to the thing and then it starts flickering and it's up.
It sounds like the operating system is crashing. Something corrupt in the software, probably.
UbuntuLinux.org. Free.
Yeah.
They'll literally, there's a thing where you can click on
it. No bookkeeping. I just started taking accounting calls.
I love Linux.
Yeah.
Used to work for
I've got Linux running on everything except my. I've got like years worth of emails on my Eudora. So I use my Windows box to fill my email.
Right.
UbuntuLinux.org will send you free CDs.
Their PCs are so cheap, they have to do everything on
volume,
and
you
can't spend any time.
And they come in a little case. You know, you got a little. One side is a live CD, so you can put it in the machine and play without installing it. The other is an automatic installer. In fact, I put it on this thing, and I set the thing up when I installed Windows, and I said, just take half the drive.
Sounds good.
So I'm going to.
I'll let you know.
So I put
we'll give you a call.
Now I'm going to have to spend like 10 hours on this. Comes up and says, oh, all right. You have another.
All
right. You have two partitions here.
Yep.
Do you want an A?
I have a C and then it's like
B, dual boot with Windows,
when I go to
or
click
C,
on watch,
do it manually.
It doesn't play.
So B, and 10 minutes later it's installed. And it comes up and gives me the manual menu. Do I want to do Ubuntu or an Ubuntu?
What happens?
Thank you, sir. Nicely done.
When it tries.
He's smiling.
Did
you leave something here? You forgot something?
But it doesn't show anything.
Steve. Steve, do you get at the bottom it should say connecting, spooling, buffering?
Well, you know what?
Any of that?
Buffering, the whole thing goes right all the way through. It's done.
But
nothing. The video
is
just
but I've never been able to reproduce it.
You could try the Real stream because I know CNN does Windows Media or Real.
I did try Real.
Yeah.
At least at first, you know. Then later on, I mean, I've done Gen 2. I've done it all.
Some of the videos play on other sites.
Well, I have, but you know, I'd rather play with the thing than play with getting it to spend today.
You might want to try
installed.
Clearing your
that's what I do for a living.
Internet
like
cache and
if I really
browser history. There might be some stuck file in there.
I didn't delete the cache, but I did delete files.
Separating your internet files,
like,
yeah. You can try deleting the internet cache as well and see if that does does it.
I even went to Mozilla because I'm using Internet Explorer, which is a no-no.
It just lets a lot of stuff in, yeah.
Yeah. So I have Outlook Express. I've had it for years.
Yeah, he'll tell you.
No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try.